Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. Those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad that you all could tune in today. As well as those joining us on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106liferadio.com, we're glad to have all of you with us as well. Charles Rosenberg is making his first appearance on our program this year to talk to us not only about his new book, Right to Die, but what it's been like for him to draw from his previous experience as a former legal analyst, as well as, of course, other work that he's been able to do to write this story that introduces us to a really interesting character. His name is Rory Calburton. We'll talk to Charles not only about the book, but also what it's been like for him to see the response and what he hopes you're able to take away from the series that he's creating. Charles, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. You know, I love the title from the very beginning. Again, the title is Right to Die, and of course, for is Right being W-R-I-T-E. And this is a really, really fascinating read. It really grabs you in from the very first chapter. Charles, what has it been like for you? The book was released this summer. What has it been like for you to see the response so far?
The responses have been great. You know, the reader reviews, for example, on Amazon have been terrific. And I think people really like the fact that there are really two almost co-protagonists. There's Rory Calburton, who's a 40-ish lawyer who went to a down-and-out, non-accredited law school that I frankly made up called the Chester A. Arthur School of Law, named for a somewhat unheralded former president. And it's up near Magic Mountain, which is a Six Flags amusement park north of here, famous for its roller coasters. And he's paired up, so he's got what we'd call not-so-great credentials. And he's paired up with a young new associate at the firm who just finished clerking for the United States Supreme Court Chief Justice. And her reaction when she sees his diploma is, where is it? And she's a 30-ish woman. So there's a lot of conflict there.
Yeah. The character Sarah is definitely a fascinating one. We're going to talk more about their dynamics together. Charles, as well, you know, for you, I mean, this has to be a fascinating thing. As I said, a lot of people know you as a legal analyst for television, then, of course, your previous work. I mean, what was it about writing, though, that made you say that this was something that you wanted to do?
I think it's partly that I'm really interested in the dynamics of characters within big law firms. My first three novels were set in a large law firm, although in a somewhat different setting. And this one is, too, because they're kind of worlds unto themselves, and I really enjoy exploring those worlds.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, it's very obvious from the response, Charles, that people enjoy this world, too. I think, for one thing, because we're also nosy, I think we like to be able to know that there is, you know, things that we can learn that, you know, that may be, you know, beneath what we actually see on the surface. But I think there also is a curiosity that takes place, or people, you know, wanting to know that justice can reach people no matter where they might be. You know, I think the thing is about this book, as we're able to get into it, is that it really shows that no matter how powerful you are, that when it comes to the end, that, you know, that you hope that truth will be able to win out. Is that kind of what, you know, what you think kind of draws Rory in? It, you know, the search for being able to make a difference, be able to do something that can make a difference.
Well, I think so. And, you know, he's basically a civil lawyer who used to be a criminal defense lawyer. And so he's now turned his attentions to doing justice in a civil context. But he's drawn into a criminal case, and there the criminal defendant is his boss in the law firm, the founder of the firm. So he has a particular motivation to not only, see justice done, but to see his boss not be convicted for a crime that Rory at least doesn't think he committed. One other thing I might say, Cyrus, about these courtroom drama novels is I think people like courtroom scenes, particularly where witnesses are being cross-examined. And I think one of the things that people like about those, and I've thought about this a lot, is they like seeing people in a position where they have to answer your question. You know, one of the nice things about somebody on a witness stand is they can wiggle and try to get out of it. But in the end, if the lawyer's good and the judge is good, they have to answer the question. And I think people like that.
Right, right. I think there also is the, you know, with this case that Roy finds and then Charles, that we're able to see, you know, the idea of truth and how people kind of come to that too, I think is such an interesting thing. I want to talk about Roy for a moment. I mean, how did this character initially come to you?
Well, this character came to me because, you know, over the years I've read a lot of legal thrillers and I've seen a lot of TV shows that are legal shows, and I teach a course actually called Law and Popular Culture at the Loyola Law School here in L.A. And so I've noticed over the years that, you know, most lawyer characters are said to have gone to great law schools. And I thought it would be fun for a change to have a really good lawyer character who went to a not-so-great law school, because the truth is there are lots of great lawyers who went to not-so-great law schools. And, Frank, there are not-so-good lawyers who went to great law schools, too. So I was wanting to explore the psychology of such a person. And Rory, in fact, has something of a minor self-confidence problem because of that, because he got into this firm sort of because his father was friends with his father. The managing partner's father was friends with his partner. So he feels like he got in the back door, and he's kind of self-conscious about it. And so it's interesting to see how that plays out when he's surrounded by all these other lawyers who went to so-called great law schools.
Right, exactly. You know, there is a great conversation that you have that's fairly early on in the book, and I made a note of it, Charles, because I thought it was so interesting about what I hear some of my guests talk about on this program, and especially authors, and that is writing what you know. There's a great conversation that you wrote between Catherine and Sarah that I mentioned earlier, and Rory, about, you know, why it is that this one individual could not have written this work, or was not credited for writing a work. And part of the conversation basically was, hey, you know, this isn't what he's known for. You know, if he was going to start writing, you know, this is what he would have written. Do you feel? I bring that up for this reason. Do you feel as though that if you were going to write books, that these were the type of books that would not only interest you, but you believe would also interest your audience as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, some of that came from the fact that as a consultant to a lot of legal TV shows, I've read hundreds of scripts, and I've noticed that writers, both of scripts and novels, get kind of pigeonholed into this is what they do, and then when they want to do something different, people's reaction is, well, they can't do that, or they couldn't have done that, or somebody else must have written this. It's kind of like if you look at To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, a lot of people said that Harper Lee couldn't have written that. It must have been written by somebody else. You know? And so I think that's a constant theme.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think, too, it really shows how, you know, as you alluded to, and as we were, you know, and I'm trying to talk around this so I don't spoil anything for those who haven't read the book yet, but what Rory realizes, too, is that things, as I said earlier, are not always as they are seen to be, but also by being on one path, it sometimes leads you to another path. As you mentioned, you know, he might have been on one track, and that may have been what he was working on, but other things came out. How much fun was that for you? I mean, I'm always curious when I'm talking to especially authors who write mysteries as to how much of the story they actually know and how much surprises them as it developed. Did you go into this book kind of knowing about the twists and turns you wanted to take, or was some of that this coming to you as the story progressed?
Oh, I think a lot of it came to me as the story progressed. You know, it's really hard to describe this process, but I gave the publisher a proposal for the novel. It was a few pages long. You might call it a very rough outline, but there's a lot to be filled in, and really it's true that characters kind of write themselves as you go along. And so these characters, you know, I wrote three earlier novels which have the same set of characters in them, and by the third novel I pretty much knew who those characters were. In this one I really didn't know very much about these characters, and they had to be developed as they went along, and the same thing really went for the plot twists. There were a couple of what I might call bends in the road that I knew about in advance, but a lot of the smaller twists were things that developed as I went along, and sometimes there were things that I had planned to do that I decided I really needed to abandon because they didn't work. So it's kind of, it's always a work in progress, and I'm working now on a sequel, and the question there is, well, what's going to happen there? And that too is as yet an unwritten work, both literally and figuratively.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for you, I mean, can kind of step back for a moment, Charles. Well, let me first say, for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Charles Rosenberg to our program today. He's an individual who's been known not only as a former legal analyst, but also he's a best-selling author of other work, as you heard him reference here. One of the books you might have heard of is Death on the High Floor. But now we're celebrating the release of his new book this year, Right to Die, and we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get the book for yourself. Charles, what I was going to say was, I mean, now, of course, you're in this world also where now in real time you're able to connect with the world through social media and to be able to get that feedback, I mean, other than just meeting people in person. What has that been like for you as a storyteller, to kind of have people, you know, reach out to you, have people be able to follow your work, and then this book lead them to maybe previous work that they had not read of yours?
Yeah, it's clear that the books, you know, kind of cross-pollinate. But one thing I'd say is I've been lucky enough to have almost 3,000 reader reviews among the four books that are now published. And I read them all. I know there are some writers who don't, but I learn from them. You know, I mean, there are crazy ones occasionally. Somebody posted a one-star that said, I haven't read the book and I'm not going to. And I thought, well, that's a little strange. You know,
right?
But or my Kindle didn't work. You know, one star. But for the most part, I think, you know, whether they be good, bad, or indifferent, and I'm fortunate that most are good, I can learn from them what readers are thinking. And one of the things I talk about in a blog post I wrote, for example, is that personally I prefer kind of a medium burn or slow burn in the start of a mystery. But lots and lots of readers these days want a fast burn. And I've thought to myself, well, you know, I really, to some extent, should give them what they want. It's not like I'm trying to write War and Peace.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, for yourself, I mean, along the way, I mean, do you find yourself, you know, and it's funny you mentioned that about what others say, I mean, what readers say. I mean, it really shows, you know, that connection there. I mean, has that been easy for you to get used to, having that kind of a connection with these people who are following your work and really getting into these characters that you've created?
Yeah, I think it has been. I mean, to start with, you know, when Death on a High Floor, the first one, was published, and there were a lot, I think it has over 1,000 reviews, it took me a little while. Obviously, when a great review came along, I was very pleased, and I don't know that I spent a lot of time analyzing the great reviews. But when the middling ones, and there are a few, and the negative ones, and there are a few of those two, came along, it was initially kind of hard to read, you know, because somebody's attacking your work. But on the other hand, I think for most of those, you can learn something. And so I developed a thicker skin, and I think lawyers have a thick skin anyway to start with, or most do.
Yeah.
And so it was a learning process, and I enjoy it. And I enjoy hearing from readers via email as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think that, you know, inevitably happens, Charles, and I'm sure you have experienced this as well. You and I did not discuss it before we went on here, but the question from other aspiring writers as to how you've done it, you know, what did you do, you know, how did this happen for you? I mean, what has that been like for you to experience? Because I can only imagine that it has, where people want to know, okay, well, you know, how did you do this? I've been working on this work, or I've had this idea. How did you, you know, get through the process? What has that been like for you to use your own experience to be able to kind of share some insight for others?
I guess, you know, this is going to sound perhaps commonplace, but one way to write a novel is simply to do it. Jane Smiley wrote a book called 13 Ways of Thinking About the Novel, and one of the things she says is there is that anyone can write a novel, and what she means by that is that we all know what the form is because most people have read hundreds or thousands of novels in their lives. And so you know what the structure is, and all you have to do is sit down and do it. That doesn't mean necessarily that it will be good or that people will want to read it, but it'll be a novel. And I guess that's a different way of saying, you know, if you want to write a novel, write one and finish it. And then the other thing I'd say, and this is something I've done a lot, is when I go through drafts of my novels as I go along, I have a group of about 20 beta readers, and I give them the drafts, sometimes when they're only 5 or 6 chapters long, and they're kind enough to read and give me their comments. And I've trained them, I think, to say, to give me their true feelings. I tell them, look, I'm not looking for you to say I love this. I mean, if you did, great. But I want to know what your critique is. And that's very helpful. So the other thing I'd say to people is not only just write it, but be sure to give it to people to read and ask them to be candid, because you can learn a lot from what they say.
Right, for sure. I think that is it, and I think that that says a whole lot. I mean, that you would even share that information with them as well. So for you, I mean, do you feel any pressure at this point, Charles? You mentioned, of course, you know, how people flock to, you know, this first series that you did and the reviews coming in for it. With the, as you're beginning this new series, I mean, what was it like? Did it feel like you were starting over in a sense?
It didn't really feel so much like I was starting over, because I felt I learned a lot from writing the first series. But it mm-hmm. felt like, oh, gosh, what if this isn't as successful as the first series, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What if people don't like these characters? And I was really pleased when one reader wrote in a review, you know, I didn't know if I was going to like these characters because I really loved the first characters, and I was nervous. And then the reader said, but I love these characters even more. And then I thought to myself, that's great, but then I realized, oh, you know what? I'm competing with myself in
right.
this stuff, which was kind of, I suppose I should have realized that to start with, but it was kind of a revelation to me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what a great thing. I mean, and I think, too, you know, for our audience out there, no matter what your passion might be, I mean, I think, you know, it goes without saying, definitely you want to be able to please yourself first, because you're the creator of this work, and I think that's the important thing. If you believe in what you're doing, I think that is definitely the first step. And then, Charles, I think you shared some great advice. Don't be afraid to share. I think that is the other takeaway for people out there, regardless, again, of what their particular passion might be. If you've been given a gift, it's your responsibility to be able to share that gift, and that's exactly what Charles is doing. Again, everyone, Charles Rosenberg has been our guest. A great conversation with you, Charles. The book is entitled Right to Die. It's the first in his new series. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can pick it up there. Or, of course, you can have it ordered at your favorite bookstore if they don't have it there. Charles, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up what's coming up next for you?
Well, there are two ways. One is I have a website, CharlesRosenbergAuthor.com. And I also have an email address, charles.rosenberg.author@gmail.com, and I'm happy to hear from people in either medium.
All right. So make sure you're always staying connected with Charles for sure, and being able to connect with him and let him know what you think about this and his previous work as well. Charles, really appreciate you stopping by. And look, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Well, thanks. I've really enjoyed the interview, and I look forward to coming back.
All right, looking forward to that as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Charles, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.